Milwaukee Journal Sentinel Milwaukee Bucks podcast talking about the streaking Milwaukee Bucks. They have won 12 games in a row for the first time since the 1981-1982 season, history being made at Pfizer Forum and beyond. My name is J.R. Radcliffe, host of the Bucks podcast. I'm going to be joined here in moments on the other line by Matt Velasquez, Bucks beat reporter for the Milwaukee Journal Sentinel. He is at all the games covering the action, which of course you can read all about at jsonline.com. It is the holiday season, so you want to check out all the opportunities there and the discounts available with in getting a digital subscription to the Journal Sentinel. You can check that out at jsonline.com/deal. The Milwaukee Bucks, like we said, are cruising. Matt Velasquez, we're going to play a game to start out with. I did not prepare you for this. How many, I know this all comes before you were born, but the 1981-1982 Bucks team is the last team to win this many games in a row, 12 games in a row. How many members of that team do you think you can name?
Oh, gosh. That's going to be pretty difficult. The Bucks weren't really on my radar at all then.
Well, fortunately, a couple of these guys, their numbers hang in the rafters, so there are some possibilities here.
So that's true. That's true. I'm gonna start with Marcus Johnson.
That's good. He was wearing number 8, small forward for that team out of UCLA. I believe that was only his that was his fourth year in the league, so he'd been around a few minutes.
Okay. Junior Bridgman.
Very good. Definitely played.
And then Sidney Moncrief.
Yes.
Was Brian Winters on
yes,
that team?
Yes, he certainly was in his seventh year out of South Carolina, shooting guard on that team. You got it. I know you can get at least one more, but there's a couple names on here.
Did I say Bobby Dandridge?
You did not. You now have 5 members of the 81-82 team. He was in his 12th season already at that point.
Let's think.
I mean, I'm already impressed. I feel like you pulled this off for somebody who was not born when this happened.
I'm just going to say... Yeah, so he was in the rafters, so I'm just going to... Bob Lanier
yes!
had to be somewhere in this area, right?
Incredible! That's his 11th season in the league. 6'11", big man out of St. Bonaventure. Yes, Bob Dandridge and Bob Lanier both in the latter portion of their career, but the veterans on that team, you now have 6 guys on that team. I don't think you can get another one, but you might, so maybe just take a heat check here. Find one more name for me.
No, I can't do it.
You can't do it. All right.
And I mean, I'm just thinking about the guys who the Bucks have their jerseys retired.
Yeah, we
and,
got all those guys.
Yeah, I think we're all out of those. So that's basically as far as my knowledge goes.
Incredible.
Which I'm okay with.
Yeah, okay. So a couple names that people might be familiar with. Quinn Buckner out
of
India.
Yeah, I think of him. See, the funny thing is when I used to intern with the Pacers, like he was there. Play-by-play guy on their broadcast, so I always associate with him with the Pacers. But then I remember when I was there, I learned he only played for the Pacers for like a year. Like he played there and he retired there and then he stayed there.
Yes.
So that always throws me off. Okay.
Yeah, he's from Indiana originally, so that sort of makes sense why he would do that. But a couple other names that fans might be familiar with: Alton Lister, 7-foot big man, was in his rookie season out of Arizona State. Scott May. I know Scott May. I know his son a little bit better following that North Carolina team. I believe that was 2005. When they beat the Badgers in the Elite Eight along the way. That was his son, Sean May. But Scott May was on that team, also out of Indiana. Maybe Pat Cummings is a name that rings a bell, but a few of these other names, Mickey Johnson, Harvey Catchings, Jeff Crompton, Mike Evans, Brad Holland, Robert Smith, Kevin Stakom. I don't know if anybody's going to quite be familiar with those guys, but very good. 6 names you got. I am impressed, Matt Velasquez. That's awesome.
I'm just very lucky that the guys whose names I like can pull off the top of my head are guys who the Bucks have retired their jerseys and they happen to play on that team, which makes sense. Like, you know, a team that had 6 guys whose jerseys were retired. Oh yeah, they won 12 games in a row and they're really good. I'm shocked.
Yes. I make fun of you, I guess, a little bit for saying that this happened before you were born. I should point out that on the night they won their 9th of 12 games, that's February 14th, 1982, is the night that J.R. Radcliffe was born somewhere in Pennsylvania and then moved to Wisconsin shortly after that. But yes, that is the year of my birth. I was born during this 12-game winning streak. It is literally the best winning streak of my lifetime at this point. So, It has been it's been really impressive, and it gets difficult to even sort of break it down because it's the Bucks have finally sort of hit a streak here, particularly in these last couple games against Charlotte and New York, where they have won handily. That's probably the one thing that was missing for this team is that they were winning kind of a lot of these games, not in impressive fashion necessarily. I mean, they were winning them fairly convincingly in many cases, but they would get a big lead, lose that lead, and then sort of pull away at the end. But we're not seeing that lately. We're seeing the Bucks in their full dominant best. I guess I'll just open up to you just a takeaways you may have from this stretch because we could ask about individual things. At some point, we're just going to start repeating ourselves. So over the last this last few games, they have not had the toughest schedule in recent play. What are one or two things that have jumped out at you that you really that you really think is something interesting for Bucks fans?
Well, I think it's been impressive the way they've been able to pretty much regardless of opponent bring it pretty much every night. There have been quarters or halves or stretches where they haven't necessarily played their best, but overall they haven't experienced that kind of trap game type situation where they just don't have it at all, or they're looking ahead to the next game or whatever it may be. It also helps that like no one ever says that like Indiana or Chicago or Cleveland nightlife is undefeated. So like those are most of the road games on this stretch, at an Oklahoma City and Atlanta. Those are the it's been a pretty road heavy stretch, which has helped. Or I mean a home heavy stretch, which has helped after a road heavy start to the season. And Giannis has kind of just led the way in terms of on the court and just his demeanor. He doesn't ever want to lose. He's very competitive. He wants to treat every game like it's very important. And the team has followed suit. They always give that cliche of, one game at a time, one day at a time, all that stuff. But, to their credit, they've actually followed through on that and done that, and been able to maintain the same high level of expectations. And, then they got fortunate with the schedule a little bit. I mean, you look at, Saturday, they were coming off a back-to-back. Charlotte was coming off a back-to-back, and the Bucks absolutely demolished them. Then, they get a day off, and the Knicks are on a back-to-back, and the Knicks don't have their top 2 point guards and Mook Morris and all that. But that still really doesn't matter, because they're not that great anyway. But the Bucks didn't treat them, a team that's not very good. They came out and they, immediately got up on them. I think it was 7-0. They never trailed back to back, wire to wire wins, and then let their foot off the pedal. And then that allows lots of guys to play fewer minutes than usual, a bunch of other guys to play more minutes than usual. Those guys didn't let up. Those, each game it was different guys who were contributing and kind of having fun out there, making the most of their opportunity. And it's been a pretty strong stretch for the team as a whole and generally impressive.
I'm going to backtrack real quick. I don't. I think I mentioned Mickey Johnson, but didn't want to shortchange him. He started almost every game from that 81-82 team, 12.9 points per game, 6 rebounds. He only spent a couple years in Milwaukee, but did not want to gloss over Mickey Johnson, who was a pretty good player. If the Brewers were on a streak of 12 straight wins, certainly there'd be George Wedbergers in the balance, so everybody'd be very excited about that, as we've seen in a couple, well, we certainly saw a couple years ago when they went on that run. I don't feel that palpable buzz for the Bucks, and I don't really know why. They went 15-1 in November. Giannis is playing at the peak of his powers. The Bucks are the best team in the Eastern Conference, and the gap is widening between them and the other teams in the Eastern Conference. So I don't know why there isn't this buzz around this team as much. And maybe you're seeing something that I'm not. But I guess part of it is if you take a step back, this Bucks team was a middling playoff team as recently as a couple years ago. I know they've taken a quantum leap forward to the point where they're so good that we're really just kind of looking forward to the postseason at this point. But 12 wins in a row is nothing to just gloss over. I mean, this should be a massive deal. What do you think it is that's holding it back just from a cultural sense? Like, why are people not all the way into this? Maybe it's the time of year with the holidays and stuff. I don't know. Maybe you're seeing something I'm not. But what is your reaction to that? Do you feel like this is a little bit undersold or underserved by the fan populace?
I think there's probably a few variables here. I think one, you're right in saying that, it's the holidays. People might kind of get lost in basketball a little bit at this time of year. I know that, you know, that's a totally reasonable thing. I think also the Brewers have never had a winning streak while the Packers were playing.
Oh, good point.
So, you know, there's that element of it. I think a lot of people, you know, and very reasonably so, who are multi-sport Wisconsin fans, they're probably still focused on the Packers, which, you know, nothing wrong with that. It's very early in the NBA season. They'll come back around in time for the playoffs, I'm sure. But, you know, but there's that. Usually when the Brewers are playing well, it's a monopoly. They're the only, you know, the only act going in terms of sports around the state. So you get more of a buzz with that. Also, you know, the Bucks are expected to do this. Like, they, it's not like the Brewers, like, are, were coming off, you know, I think when they had that streak, I don't think that that's when they were coming off the NLCS. I think that's when, before they went to it. So, you know, I think when you come off the season that the Bucks had, and then you start the next season by winning 18 of 21 games, people are like, well, yeah, I kind of expected that. They're really good. you know, not that we should normalize it or expect it or anything like that. But I think that there's that tendency. Also, you know, the Bucks haven't had any walk-off wins really in this stretch. They had that one game at home against Utah where, you know, Brook Lopez had the block of Donovan Mitchell late to seal the win. But other than that, I guess there was the three-pointer by Brook Lopez. So again, he's the clutch one apparently in Oklahoma City to start this off. But of course, that was on a football Sunday. But then after that, it's a, you know, 9-point win, 19-point win, 14-point win, you know, 8-point win at the Hawks, you know, 8-point win at home, 14 points, 4 points, 9 points, 9, and then we're getting up into 41, 44. So I think when it gets a little bit higher, if it gets a little bit higher, then you start to see a little more heads turning, a little more, like, you know, attention to it. I would expect they'd be able to get past Detroit on Wednesday, which would push it to a baker's dozen. But then, you know, you get the real test when the Los Angeles Clippers come on Friday. You know, if they can have a streak after that game, if they can still be intact and reach 14 games, I think that will be really impressive. And maybe that will generate more buzz because that really means something. I mean, winning a bunch of games in a row against the Hawks, Cavaliers, Hornets, and Knicks, like, I can't blame people for not getting jazzed up about that. Like, those are teams that virtually anyone in the NBA should beat, not just the Bucks. So, you know, I think it'll be more exciting to see some of the higher caliber teams coming into Fiserv Forum, which we'll get a little bit of that over the first, like, 20 days of December. You got, in a two-week stretch, really, you got the Clippers, the Pelicans, who might have Zion, like, maybe. It's in the window. And then, you know, the same week, December 16th, December 19th, the Mavericks and the Lakers coming into town.
Hello.
Like, that's some good stuff.
Luka and LeBron in back-to-back games at Fiserv Forum. Yes, please.
Yes, please. Exactly. And then you get the Knicks. So it's at least that's a way. That's a way. So, you know, but three straight after that, you get Malcolm Brogdon's return. So, like, three games, you know, over a six-day stretch featuring Luka, LeBron, Brogdon's return. Like, Fiserv Forum is going to have a bunch of fun stuff going on. But I think, you know, that those types of games, that's what's going to get people interested in what the Bucks are doing and how and the streak they're having or not having or whatever's going on. Like, I think, you know, that's when the eyeballs, you know, start to get on the TV because you want to watch that game. You want to see what's going on versus the general dreck they've been playing over the past week. You know, that's not getting any people too excited. But, you know, I don't want to undersell Bucks fans. I think there still are a lot of them, many more than when I first got to Milwaukee, like 6-7 years ago. There's a lot of them who are very excited and who are very much enjoying what this team is doing, what Giannis is doing, the depth that they have, the way that they're just, you know, crushing people. There's definitely some excitement out there. So it's not like no one is excited. I think there is excitement for what the Bucks are doing, and it's definitely out there.
like you mentioned, Bucks at Detroit on Wednesday night, then back home Friday. That's on Giannis's birthday, December 6th, against the Los Angeles Clippers. They did not see Kawhi and Paul George in that first meeting, of course, in LA that the Bucks won. So this hopefully will be an opportunity to see both of those guys on the floor. And in what could be a NBA Finals preview, certainly a popular matchup pick before the season. We've talked a lot about Giannis, and we probably won't do a whole lot of that. Giannis was named Eastern Conference Player of the Week for the second time this season. I believe he won the award 6 times last year. He continues to just be on another level. And since we mentioned Luka Doncic coming into Pfizer Forum before the month is over, it's probably too early to start talking about MVP watch, but it's never really too early to start talking about MVP watch as you handicap the field in early December, because that seems like a productive exercise. Is it Giannis, Luka, and everybody else? I know there are other guys that we could definitely mention. Who else do you think really rises to the forefront at this point?
Well, I think it was Tim Bontemps. I can say this. He reached out. He was doing a straw poll of MVP candidates a couple days ago, and I don't know if he came out with it yet or not. So we'll see what comes of that on ESPN. I'm interested to see how many people he got, which I'm sure was a lot. But he asked the top five MVP candidates, and I didn't do as much research as I will do when I actually do have a vote. But I went Giannis, Harden, Luka, LeBron, Kawhi. So, you know, there's that. That was my top five at this current moment a couple days ago. Actually, I had LeBron over Luka, but still. So Giannis, Harden, LeBron, Luka, Kawhi. I feel like those are the top five. Maybe you throw AD in there. I know some people might throw Pascal Siakam in there for what he's doing with the Raptors.
The Raptors, man, they did not miss much of a beat, did they?
No, they did not, and that's been a lot. A lot of that's because the way Siakam has elevated himself as a playmaker. You know, last year he won Most Improved Player. A lot of people are saying half jokingly that maybe he could win Most Improved again, just the way that he's gone up. And I remember the days when Giannis won Most Improved, and then people joked that he could win Most Improved again, because, you know, it's I'm not gonna say the same or similar trajectory, but it's not that different. I don't want to necessarily compare those two players. I don't think that's necessarily fair to them, but I think the level of improvement year after year in itself is comparable. But I think Giannis, just, you know, the reigning MVP, better stats, doing it all for the team with currently the best record in the NBA. That's something that's very impressive. James Harden is still just a maestro on offense with the ball in his hands. He put up 60 the other night in like three quarters. Maybe he played too many minutes in a blowout, but I don't care. I wish he played the whole game, because that would have been super fun. And I care about fun things.
Hey, Trae Young played a lot of those minutes too. I know the Hawks were not happy about that, but like Trae Young was still in there.
Yeah. And so, you know, if you're not happy about it, don't let the man score that many points. that's your own fault. I'm firmly of that belief. I would have enjoyed seeing what Harden was able to get to, points wise, and, you know, maybe some people would say that's a mockery of the game or whatever. I think that's incredible, you know, offense and shooting and efficiency and production, and I'm all about that. So he's just been fabulous. Again, he's, you know, averaging high 30s points per game, I think, at this point. You know, he's flirting with averaging 40 points a game, which is nonsense. That stuff is meaningful. 38.9 points per game, which is just bonkers. Like there's really no other way. And he's not even like shooting the 3-point shot as well as he has in the past. Like he's at 35.5%, which is good. But he's been over 36%, almost 37% the past 2 years. So like that's just wild. Like imagine if he didn't have such a poor night against the Bucks in the season opener. Like he might be averaging 40 if he didn't put up such a relative stinker, like, for him in that game. So he's been great. I think LeBron, you know, he's vintage LeBron, just aging like fine wine, leading the league in assists, I believe. while almost putting up a triple-double, or actually putting up a triple-double. I have to check those stats again. The Lakers are playing really well. They've had a cupcake schedule so far, as many people, I'm sure, have pointed out. But like, it doesn't matter. You still got to go out there and play the game, and he's putting up big numbers, you know, looking really good, playing hard on defense, closing out well. Just great stuff. You know, Luka, I don't think anybody saw him, you know, doing what he's doing now in his second season as like a 20-year-old, just averaging a double-double, going toe-to-toe with some of the best guys in the league. Dallas went into L.A. and beat the Lakers at Staples Center the other day, mostly behind Luka's brilliance. Everybody knows that he's the focal point, and he's still, you know, able to get his shots, get his guys open, do a lot of stuff. So I'm excited to see him in a short time at Fiserv Forum. And then Kawhi, you know, he's just Kawhi. Like, he just goes out there, and he's going to play at his pace, and he's going to, like, basically tell you, I'm better than you, and, like, beat you very slowly and efficiently and, you know, emotionlessly, and it's just over for you. And like, yes, like, some of that load management stuff, like, might hold him down in the MVP race, but I don't think he cares. Like, I think he's very much interested in doing what he wants to do, how he likes to do it, as often as he wants to do it, and then be as healthy as possible for the playoffs, where he can eviscerate team after team. Like, that's just kind of what he's after, and it, you know, it's impressive. And, you know, we haven't really gotten to see him and Paul George all that much. But those two guys, plus the Lou Williams, Montrezl Harrell pick and roll, which was obviously pretty devastating against the Bucks without those two guys. Yeah, that's a really good team. And Kawhi is obviously the top dog out there. And, you know, it'll be great to see what that team becomes, and whether or not, you know, Kawhi moves further up the MVP discussion, or further into the MVP discussion, because I think he can. But right now, you know, I think those are the top five guys. You can make an argument for Anthony Davis, like I said, for Siakam, for maybe for Jokic. But, you know, right now, I think it's still Giannis's trophy to defend.
So, like you said, Kawhi, Luka, LeBron, all of those MVP candidates will be in Milwaukee before December 20th. They're all coming here in the next couple weeks. I will be curious to see how the narrative develops for guys like Harden and LeBron. You're expressing admiration for Harden. I know from a fan perspective, most people are completely down on the way he plays basketball. They see him as just begging for fouls, creating fouls, taking foul shots. He's obviously a tremendous foul shooter. And so I know that we'll see if voters are a little fed up with that angle of it. And then LeBron, you know, was part of the Lakers last year, team that didn't make the playoffs, and then you've got Anthony Davis. I'm wondering if the narrative will say, well, it's Anthony Davis who's making the difference, even though LeBron, of course, as we all know, is just incredible, like you said, aging like a fine wine. He's still one of the best in the league, for sure. Let's switch to some of the other people on the roster, the Lopez twins. We'll start there. Brook has been injured the past couple games and not available. Obviously, the Bucks have rolled without him, and in his stead, his twin brother Robin has looked pretty good. Has started a couple times. Has hit some threes. He's, you know, he's not Splash Mountain yet, but you wrote about this at jsonline.com that the Bucks maybe are finding sort of, he'll hate to hear this, but the Brook Lopez light with his brother, capable of doing some of the same things. This is one of those offseason signings that right now seems to be working out. So first of all, as far as the timetable for Brook, I'm guessing it sounds like he could play even Wednesday. You know, maybe definitely by Friday. But what are you seeing out of Robin Lopez as well?
Yeah. So going back to Brook, like you said, Bud said he doesn't think this is going to be a kind of a long term thing. Doesn't think it's a big deal. Just, you know, had some back soreness. Wanted to give him some time. That meant sitting out for two games, and, you know, they want to be on top of that. They did the same thing with George Hill when he was experiencing back soreness. And the expectation, the hope, is that Brook would travel with the team on Tuesday to Detroit and then be able to play on Wednesday. But, you know, we'll see how that goes. As long as there aren't any setbacks, that's a likely scenario. I think Robin, you know, he had kind of a slow start to the season, kind of feeling his way out, feeling his way, you know, through the Bucks bench mob and you know, exactly how he was going to be most productive. Wasn't shooting the three ball, you know, well off the start of the season. You know, that's something that he hasn't done all that much in his career. I think coming into this season, he had only shot 51 threes, and most of those have come over the past two seasons. You know, before that, you know, he had one or two in a couple seasons. But he was, you know, more recently starting to you know, journey outside the three-point arc. And so he got off to a slow start with the Bucks in multiple ways. And I remember on that West Coast road trip, I wrote that, you know, he kind of was just kind of there. Like, he was like a net zero in terms of plus-minus over that trip and maybe a game or two before that. He wasn't really standing out on defense in terms of blocking shots or affecting plays. He wasn't really hurting them on offense, but he wasn't also doing that much. It was just kind of like you're waiting for him to kind of get out of the mud, really. He seemed like he was stuck in neutral. And recently, like, he's looked really good. He has a nice chemistry with Chris Middleton, where, you know, they're doing the pick and roll, and Chris is really good at bouncing those passes in there. Robin's ready for him and able to finish. You know, tangent, I think Chris is really good in the pick and roll with a lot of the Bucks bigs. I think his ability to bounce passes in there, to find those angles is really good. He displayed a lot of that against the Knicks on Monday night. It kind of took me back to the chemistry he had with John Henson, where a lot of those were lobs. And he had a good rapport with him. He had a good chemistry with Greg Monroe, doing similar things to what he's doing with Robin now. So I think, you know, that's kind of an underrated part of his skill set. But going back to Robin, like, you know, he was able to get a couple buckets in Cleveland off of Middleton feeds. He's rolling well. And then against Charlotte, he starts for Brooke, you know, who has the back soreness. He immediately gets an offensive rebound and puts that back for the first points of the game. Then he pops out to the corner and knocks down a catch-and-shoot three. Ended up with going 3 of 4 from three-point range in that game, which was a career high for made threes for him. You know, adding three blocks to the other end, he looked really comfortable and effective on both sides of the court. Started again on Monday, a little bit quieter on Monday, but still definitely seemed like he's starting to find his role and his fit with this team, which is positive for sure. And you know, I kind of joked with Bud a little bit, and I joked with Robin, say, hey, like, you know, we're going into December, and you know, Robin's 11-32 at that point from 3-point range. That's better than Brooke. Like, what do you think about that? And Bud was like, well, Brooke's got to shoot it better. you know, that's really the long and short of it. Like, yes, like, Robin's shooting well, and we like that, and we believe that Brooke's gonna shoot well. And you know, Bud was saying, hey, like, you know, don't put it past Brooke to, you know, shoot like 45% for a month, and like, really change that narrative that's been around him, that he just doesn't have it right now from three. So he could shake off that slump. That's what happens with shooters. But it's like, you know, Robin's great, but yeah, Brooks got to shoot it better. And you know, Robin, he kind of had a little twinkle in his eye when he said, well, the numbers speak for themselves. So, you know, it's kind of a fun undercurrent, for right now, but the Bucks will definitely be better off if Brooke can start to get back to near where he was, last season, which was, yeah, I believe being like a 36-37% three-point shooter for the season.
Chris Middleton, you mentioned him with the pick and rolls. He's back. In fact, last time we recorded the podcast, last couple times, there's basically been news breaking in between the recording and the posting of the podcast. We talked about Chris Middleton coming back, and then we found out later that day that he was going to be back, and he actually was back in the starting lineup against the Knicks already. He didn't have to play very much. None of the starters did in that game, but seems like he's pretty much full strength, right? I mean, it doesn't seem very limited. What are some of the things you're seeing with Chris here now that he's back from his injury?
Yeah, the funny thing is he actually played fewer minutes on Monday when he was back in the starting lineup and seemingly, like, you know, 100% good to go than he did when he was on a minutes restriction. Like, because the Bucks just, like, you know, annihilated the Knicks. And so I was like, all right, well, no point in playing anymore. But I think he's been good to go for a while. You know, he was playing like 23 23 minutes a game since he came back. He was coming off the bench for three games in a row. You know, Bud had him playing basically the last 5 minutes or so of every quarter, and that way he could be out there for extended periods that were had a defined end, and also be out there potentially for crunch time when the Bucks needed him, while also keeping fresh. I think he, after that first game, he came back against Atlanta. He was saying even then that he already felt like he was 100%. He was totally fine coming off that left thigh contusion. And he looked really good in that game, too. I think he was 4 for 5 from the field or something like that in the first half. He's had a couple steals for breakaways. Just doing Chris Middleton things, which is what you want to see from somebody coming off injury, that nothing changes, that they're able to kind of, you know, play the same way they would normally play. And he was very complimentary of Dante DiVincenzo, who started while he was out, you know, saying that Dante did a hell of a job, and that, you know, he wasn't against coming off the bench for a few games while he was coming back, because he knew that Dante was playing really well, and that was a good experience for both of them. So I think that Chris is fine. He'll be, you know, able to reinsert himself and readjust to being back in the starting lineup and playing longer minutes. And, you know, for an injury that, you know, was initially expected to keep him out for 3 or 4 weeks, to only miss about 2.5, to only miss 7 games, I think is a positive. And maybe, you know, maybe it could pay dividends down the road, in the sense that, you know, he may not have as much wear on the tires later in the season because he sat out now. And granted, like, you don't want to get injured and have to sit out because of that. But, you know, there could be a silver lining there, especially since the Bucks won every game without him.
I wanted to talk actually about Dante DiVincenzo, but kind of going a little bit long here, so I'm going to wrap it up here with one more question. A player that really fascinates me is Dragan Bender. We obviously haven't seen much of him this year, but he did get some run here in the last couple games, and I'm just so fascinated to know where it goes with him. I still feel like he's obviously quite a bit of an unknown yet at this point, but I think that's just a sneaky good signing and a high ceiling signing this offseason. I'd love to see, if they have an opportunity to get him on the court more, I'd love to see more of him. Do you still look at him as just a lottery ticket, basically? Like, you know, you scratch that, he could end up being something down the road, but it's still so unknown. Or I guess now that you've seen him a little bit in action, what's your impression of where things could go with Dragan Bender?
I still think I'm more on the lottery ticket side. I mean, they got him on a partially guaranteed deal for this year and a non-guaranteed deal for next year at the league minimum. So, you know, for a guy who was the number 4 overall pick and is still so young, I think he's just 21 years old or 22. Either way, like, he's still so young and he has a lot of room to grow. The Bucks have had him play in the G League multiple times in order just to get some action. You know, the big discussion around him, you know, and he said it, and Mike Budenholzer said it, is that they're trying to develop his body. They're trying to get him stronger. They're trying to build up, because he has plenty of skill. I don't think there's any question about his skill level. They're just trying to, you know, increase his strength and his quickness and all those different attributes. They're trying to get him into their system and kind of help him learn. I think that's one of the big benefits they see in the G League, is that they play the exact same system, use the exact same lingo, same scheme, all that kind of stuff. And so, you know, I think they see him as their long-term development piece, right? Like, they didn't have a first-round draft pick this year. They didn't have any draft picks this year, for that matter. And, you know, to get a guy of his age, which is basically the age of a lot of guys who are drafted, and to have him on this type of contract, this is their development guy. This is their guy who they're going to try to hold on to and see what he can be. And, you know, next season there could be a lot of questions or changes to the roster. And, you know, Dragan Bender could be someone who moves up in the pecking order because of, you know, his progress this year, so that they see him as someone who can help at some point. It may not be a lot now. It may not be really at all now. It might just be in these types of blowout games now. I mean, obviously you never want to be, you know, in a situation where you have a lot of injuries, but you know, outside of a multiple injury situation when it comes to their big men, I don't see him getting a ton of opportunities just because of all the guys in front of him. But I don't think that's a surprise to him. I think he knows that. I think the reason he came to Milwaukee was to actually, you know, get that developmental time and to be able to grow within a winning system after being in Phoenix for 4 years and expected to be kind of a savior as that number four pick. A lot of expectations. Now he can kind of, you know, do his own thing, you know, in a positive environment, kind of in the shadows, and just grow and build himself up and kind of reclaim his career. And, you know, we'll see where that's able to take him, but the Bucks are confident that he could be a valuable piece for them, if not now, at least sometime in the future.
Yeah, just turned 22 years old on November 17th, so a lot of intrigue there, and fortunately, like you kind of are alluding to, they don't need him. They don't need him to be a star right now. They don't need him to be even a contributor right now. They've got a lot of depth, a lot of talent, getting healthy. He is Matt Velasquez, Milwaukee Journal Sentinel beat reporter covering the Milwaukee Bucks. He will be in Detroit on Wednesday to watch the Bucks take on the Pistons, and again on Friday for Giannis's birthday, big matchup with the Los Angeles Clippers at Pfizer Forum. The Bucks' home heavy schedule continues through the midway point in the month of December. They've had a lot of opportunities at home. They've won 12 in a row. They're awesome. Matt, thank you for joining us. We will chat again very soon.
All right, we'll talk to you soon.
Find us on Apple Podcasts, Stitcher, Spotify. Find me on Twitter. I'm at @JRRADCLIFFE. You can easily find Matt Velasquez on Twitter as well. You love the fans on Twitter, don't you, Matt?
I have strong feelings, and they're generally positive.
That is the perfect response. He has strong feelings about you, fans. You should know that for sure. And as do I. Thanks for tuning in to the Milwaukee Journal Sentinel Bucks podcast. We will be with you probably again next Wednesday as well, reviewing this next stretch of basketball. Take care.